Hey y'all, it's Team Society 9 here with y'all again.
Hello.
This is Lynn, founder and CEO of Society 9.
And Megan, the director of sales and marketing.
Selling shit.
Yes.
So we're back. This is our episode 2. First episode, we kicked off our post Ronda Rousey, Holly Holm reaction pre-Thanksgiving pep talk to all of you. This time we have a very special guest, Emily Corso. Before we let her do all the talking, which I hope she's prepared for, I'm giving her the look of intimidation. Yeah.
All of it.
Just a quick announcement, really quick, for anybody who doesn't know who Society 9 is, I'll do a quick spiel. Society 9 is the brand for the fight within every woman. We make the best gear possible for the female fighter. We focus on women in combat sports, but truly we represent any female athlete who has the fight within her. We are really passionate about making the best gear possible, especially in the world of combat sports where women have been underserved for a very long time. We definitely anticipate on growing beyond that, but our heart lies in the world of combat sports and women. So here we are today with Emily Corso. She's a professional MMA fighter out of Portland, Oregon, and also a strength and conditioning coach here in Portland, Oregon. And basically, I just described a badass. I guess that one word would have covered all of the other words that I said. But we're super excited to have her here today and to tell us a little bit more about what she's been up to and just hang out. We're just kicking it today.
And introduce her as one of our first Society 9 brand ambassadors.
Oh, shit. She is indeed, in fact, our first one. We're really excited about that. And I'll let Megan talk about our brand ambassador program later. But let's shine the light on Emily and make her as nervous as possible. Just kidding.
Oh, boy.
So tell us a little bit more about yourself,
tell
Emily.
Tell us about yourself.
I usually get nervous when people are hitting me in the face, so this is a change. What about me? I'm the owner of Bold and Badass Fitness, and I'm a professional MMA fighter. That's all. That's all anyone gets to know.
So you're like, you can basically say, I am literally a certified badass at this point. If you're like a certified trainer.
Are you kidding? I'm an uncertified badass.
even better then.
I'm in the business of creating badasses.
Perfect.
So that's a replication program.
Yeah.
Badass education program. I love it. But yeah, you know, you wrote for us a really awesome post for our Storytellers blog series. Would love for you to kind of delve into your past, present, and future, because I think that's really, I think your story is like a really powerful story for our community, especially how you've evolved as an athlete, obviously, but also how you've evolved too as a person, an entrepreneur, what your role as an athlete has done to form who you are now in all of these different facets. So yeah, would love for you to tell us your story.
Yeah, well, essentially, when I was in college, I took a self-defense class, and as I have kind of done with everything in my life, I found one thing and I just got obsessed with it for the next several years. So I went from taking self-defense kind of casually to fill a PE credit to training for my first fight on a week and a half's notice. And when I won, I was like, well, obviously this is my calling in life. I just run with that, right? So luckily I had a great community of people who continue to gently encourage, push me to take fights. And that went really well for me for a while until I realized I could better expend myself towards training other people as well.
Very cool.
So tell us more about like Bold and Badass Fitness. Because you had been personal training people for a while.
Yeah.
But then you launched Bold and Badass Fitness like as a company, as a brand recently. Like it hasn't been that long.
Yeah. We had the launch or relaunch party in October. Mm-hmm. So I registered my business in January of last year, just about a year ago. Actually, it was December 30th of 2014. So just about a year ago, I registered it, and then immediately after that was injured in such a way that I couldn't do almost anything for a few months.
Oh my gosh.
As dramatic as that sounds, the minor toe injury I had prevented me from even personal training because I couldn't flex my ankle. So
I didn't know it was that bad.
Couldn't put weight. Yeah, well, I couldn't flex my ankle because I had pins in my toes and I had to wear a giant boot around for a few months. pounds. And so because of that, you know, I couldn't pick up weights or do a squat or a hinge or anything at all that essentially other than like overhead pressing and bench pressing. So I, it really slowed me.
So you got a jacked upper body is basically what you're saying.
That's what I meant to say is I'm now the Hulk. as one of my clients told me last week, I'm bulkier than she wants to be. So that's my badge of pride now.
That's awesome.
She said that to you?
Yeah. We were talking about her body goals and she was like, you know, I want to be toned, but not bulky. I mean, you're bulkier than I want to be.
Nice. So take that one.
I take it. It's not a backhanded compliment. It's a front-handed insult or something like that.
For anybody who doesn't know Emily well or has never followed her as a professional MMA fighter, there is photographic evidence of this toe injury that she is referring to, and it's not for the faint of heart. I saw it, and I just remember thinking, pretty much, like, gag reflex. And I'm not one to be squeamish either. That was like, and the best part was I reached out to you at some point being like, hey, really bummed I didn't get to see you fight because I know that you had signed with Invicta. And then I was like, you know, what happened? And you said that the injury itself wasn't actually induced from, you know, any sort of training, right? It was like literally a freak accident.
I was in the gym.
Yeah.
I faked a shot. So essentially I stomped my foot and my toe fell off. Yeah. I mean, it happened in the
Megan,
gym.
In your face.
But it could easily have happened like stepping over a curb or something on the street. Like it wasn't, you know, of all the dangerous and stupid things I've done in my life, it was really benign accident.
I mean, when I was an athlete, my coaches always told me, they were like, you're probably more likely to get hurt reaching for the remote than you are like.
Oh yeah.
I've walked into a door. I remember after doing a drill in Krav Maga, I was literally walking away from the mats. I was walking away, like drill was done. I was in rest mode, okay? And I rolled my ankle in the process of walking away. And I was like, okay.
Yep.
It's awesome.
Life is dangerous. Life is dangerous. One of the things we talk to our clients about is not just training for event. Like, you don't have to be like bikini season or getting married. It's like, you're just training for life. Life is hard enough. So,
yeah. Right. Especially if you're clumsy.
Yeah.
Like some of us.
I had an injury. I popped a rib while yawning. I reached over my head like classic morning stretch, popped a rib. Like everything is dangerous if you let it. So
yeah, no, my chiropractor, I popped a rib doing weird things too. Like my chiropractor told me he was adjusting my back and he was like, I think you popped a rib. And I think the way that you did it was actually because of your posture. Like my posture was so straight that I had literally popped it in the direction that he was feeling it. And I was like, okay. That's cool.
That's actually a really common injury in rowing. And I spent about 4 years in college with broken ribs and dislocated ribs. And my
position?
Rowers are really well known for like sports specific training to a fault. Like I have friends who were taught how to squat with their feet close to each other because that's how you sit in a boat. So I have friends that like don't have the ability to squat properly because that's how they have squatted for 10 years of rowing. It's very weird. But so part of that problem is a lot of times you don't develop muscles to balance out other muscles. So I was kind of like a freak of nature as a rower. I went from being this like 240 pound, like overweight teenager within a year to training to be on the junior national team. So I went from like couch potato to training like twice a day. So my body just like developed way too quickly for its own good. And I broke a rib when I was at World Championships. And that was 2 weeks before I went to college. And my college coach, being the lovely individual that he is, decided not to redshirt me and let me rest. He instead decided to switch sides of rowing so that the strain wouldn't be as bad on the broken rib. So what kept happening is he would switch my side with depending on what rib was broken at the time. So I would row on one side until I broke that rib, and the other rib would be kind of healed, and then I would switch sides and row on the other one. So for 4 years, I had like permanently, like I would have like visible bruising on my ribs. And like, I remember that. And like my trainer, I was like, you know, what can I do? And my trainer's like,
stop rowing.
Quite frankly, like when you breathe, you use your ribs. And if you're going to keep rowing, they're just never going to get better. So I know that that's a very all too familiar pain for me.
It's good to hear that your athletic experience was similar to mine.
Yeah. my experience with college coaches is a unique and lovely. Actually, it's not that unique. That's the problem.
Right.
So
I think that's like an interesting thing I observe about like people who take athleticism, quote unquote, training, whether it's for an event or a sport or whatever, or even if it's just for day-to-day life, like people who take it super seriously and don't listen to their body. I mean, obviously in the context you're talking about, it was like elite competition, so it's a different kind of beast. But it, especially in this season, the quote unquote New Year's resolution season, where people are going balls to the wall about fitness, and like I can't tell you how many times I've heard people talking about injuries they're trying to nurse, but they're like, no, I have to do this because it's time right now, like this one moment. And it drives me crazy. I'm sure you've probably heard a lot or seen a lot yourself as an instructor with your peers or people you train with.
Yeah, like someone whose kneecap is like on the side and they're like, it really hurts today, but I really have to get squats in.
Yeah.
She stares at Dion.
But I mean, I'm bad about that too. Like if I'm like, no, like if I haven't worked out for a few days and I'm like, that's it. Like I have to work out today. And it's like, oh, but my back is really bad today. I'm like, no, I have to work out today. And I just get it in my head. It's so stupid.
Yeah. What do you advise your clients? Yeah. What do you,
I mean, there's always something you can do, right? So like on the one hand, if you're hurt, that doesn't mean you can't work out, but it does mean that like, you know, if your kneecap is busted, it's not squat day, you know, you may people worry like, oh, it'll be imbalanced, right? I'll miss a day of training. It's like, so what? So you do correctives for days. Like I myself am really guilty and I write the programs. And yet when I'm on my training, I look at it and I'm like, if I can't do something exactly as it's written, I freak out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not the letter of the laws. It's like, it's made by humans. So,
right.
Our bodies.
It's a mindfulness thing. You just got to realize, you're like, why is this so important to me? Could I get this need met some other way? So,
well, I think too, it's important to know that like everybody's body is different. And just cause like one person works out. And that was a huge revelation for me when I was kind of coming to the end of my rowing career, because not to go back to rowing, but they have these standards, right? Like every rower has to train 2 times a day and you have to spend, you know, you have to row 15 to 20 miles every morning, and then you're going to lift or you're going to erg. And it is this really sport specific training, but that doesn't work for everybody. Especially if you're someone who has, so I had back issues, so I had to be really careful with like my nervous system, but there was no flexibility in the programming. And I would get like emails from coaches being like, why aren't you doing this erg piece? I'd be like, because my back hurts. But even if you're still beating people and still showing results, you're not allowed to change from the program. And so when I quit rowing, that was like a huge revelation that I could still see results without like following a program to a T. Like it was okay if I didn't feel like doing 90% or something for my lift that day. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, you know, it's hard when you run a team too, to let people have different stuff. Yeah. But I think after like, you know, in the time since I was like a competitive professional athlete, it's been very hard to let go of the idea that pain is normal.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like when you're competing, people are like, well, you're just going to train anyways. Obviously, if you have a fight coming up in 2 weeks, you're going to do something no matter what. But you don't really need that in the outside world.
Yeah. Like if you're just living life, you don't have any goals. Like if you're hurting, like take care of it. Well, don't.
Yeah. And like, you know, you get these rose colored glasses where sometimes I'll say something, you know, to my partner, and I'll be like, well, you know, back when I was fighting, I could do this, this, and this. And he's like, yeah, but you were hurt all the time.
Yeah.
You were grumpy and you were miserable. I'm like, well, this diet worked. I'm like, yeah. Or, you know, you passed out in the sauna and almost died. Like, you know, it's like, it worked.
I shouldn't laugh about that.
You know, in MMA, something works if you survive it. They're like, that's why so many, I think, really crazy, like weight cutting techniques and stuff persist, is they're like, well, if you don't die, we just keep trying that on people.
No. There was that Chinese MMA, Chinese or Taiwanese, I can't remember. But
I think he was Taiwanese, I think.
Okay, yeah. I hope I didn't politically offend anybody. but he passed away from weight cutting.
Oh, yeah. That's the second one.
Recently.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, recently. It was
high level, too. Mm-hmm. Second high level athlete that I know of in the last year.
That's why I get really frustrated with USADA, which is, for those of you who don't know, it's the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency. It's so frustrating that they're not allowing IVs after that, when it's like, how? Like, it's it's one of the only ways to properly rehydrate back after doing
something. Well, the problem is that, I mean, my understanding, right, is like, it's the same thing as how, you know, our local, one of our local fight promotions, the FCFF, did, or maybe still does, only do same day weigh-ins. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's much more dangerous if you cut a lot of weight to fight same day, but they think the reasoning goes, you know, in the same thing for USADA and the IVs, is that people won't do crazy things.
Which is
not what happens.
Yeah.
Do crazier things. And
well, and it's, and it just doesn't work because, I mean, you want the like physical upper hand in fighting. So it's all peaches and cream to say like, yeah, everyone should be fighting at their natural weight.
Right.
I mean, if I were to fight at my natural weight, there would be no one in my weight class. So I'm going to suck it down. And
I mean, what's absurd too, is like, I took my first fight at 145, or maybe it was 140, something like that. It was like really heavy. It was heavier than I was, but we didn't know that at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, after a few fights, I was like, well, if we're gonna take two people who are like 35 or 40 pounds, we're both gonna cut to 25, and then we're both gonna rehydrate. Why don't we just
fight it where you're at?
Yeah. But that gentleman's agreement doesn't exist, and then every once in a while, you get someone who doesn't cut any weight, and that sucker gets owned.
Yeah.
So
kind of like the Gabby Garcia fight. That was.
Have you seen that?
I haven't.
Oh, it is.
I'll send you a link.
It is awkwardness. It is.
She was how much, like 220 pounds?
She weighed in, Gabby Garcia weighed in at 217, and she is, on paper, she's 6'3". And then she fought a Tongan woman who was, the woman she fought weighed in at 201, and I want to say she was 5'10", but that she had to have been shorter than that. Like seeing the two of them together, like when you watch the fight, it was just like, how is this only in Japan, first of all? Second of all, it was just, you watch them come at each other. And obviously the Tongan girl did not want to go to ground with Gabby. And it was just, it was so unfortunate to watch. Like they both, it almost looked like they were slapping each other. Like it just.
So you're saying you don't think that's going to happen on Invicta anytime soon?
I mean, I just.
Well, it's like 10 weight classes above anything Invicta.
It was so, it was so frightening. And I was just like, I really hope they paid that Tongan girl well, because that is, after a cut, the fact, because I was following Gabby on Instagram and like she cut weight.
What is the weight class there? Is it supposed
to be 205? It was like, it was an open weight category, clearly, because there was like a 20 pound difference basically.
Oh, she didn't miss weight. So they just thought,
two big girls.
I mean, I love my brain. I would never have said yes to that.
Concussion central.
Well, you think that now, but
yeah. Jeez, just you saw them come at each other and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Still. Well, what was your experience like as a professional MMA fighter? Like, obviously you have a lot of grit to want and be able to endure not just the training, but the literal fights themselves. Would you say that, like, what would you say was like the, in the subject of Gabby Garcia and just like scary moments, what would you say was like maybe like the scariest or most intimidated moment that you ever felt, like
the
when you were
scariest moment
or intimidating, maybe not scariest, but you know, like intimidating, where you were just like, wow, I should rethink this.
A moment that kind of made you go, huh?
A moment that made me go, my second pro fight. So my first two were in the same night, and I fought Linnell House, and then immediately fought Ariel Beck later that night. Mm-hmm. And Beck,
so was it like a tournament competition or what?
No, well, it's complicated. Like originally, months before then, it had been a tournament, and they didn't find anyone else for the tournament besides me and my opponents. They were like, all right, it's just one fight. And then the night before, we were weighing in, and one of the other girls on the card, Beck, her opponent had not showed up. She actually just fought KGB, what's that girl's name?
Andrea Lee.
Yeah, so they fought earlier this year, or late last year. But in any case, Beck's opponent didn't show up, and she was weighed in at like 130 or 135. We're like, well, it's close enough, right? From 25 to there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, I think I can get her. And so we went in to fight her, and there was like, and then someone told me like, oh yeah, by the way, she's a Golden Gloves boxer and she's very good. And we got in the ring with her, and within like my first minute in there, she landed a heavy right hand on me, and I was rocked, like saw stars like in a Disney cartoon, like little birds flying around my head.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, this was a terrible idea. I won my first fight. I could have just walked away, and I like.
But instead, I signed up for this.
And so I was like, you know what would be cool? Two fights in one night. Well, oh, and the reason why that could happen is Montana doesn't have an athletic commission or something to that effect.
Wow,
so it would never be allowed in Oregon. Like they don't. There have been that kind of thing, but not in a long time, and so. We thought it would be a cool opportunity to take while we were somewhere that we could get away with
and
it.
And about 60 seconds later, that was
and
not
I was like,
a cool.
That's terrible. And so the next time she swung, I just climbed onto her back. I was like, I have to stand behind her or I'll get hit again.
Oh my gosh. How tall is she?
She was about my size. She might be like 5'8 or something.
Dion just looked up a photo from the fight. And
no,
like,
Dion's watching a video of your fight.
Are you watching her beat me up?
Yeah. My husband is creeping on you.
The tall thing reminds me, I fought a girl... in Washington, who was, I think she was 5'10 or 5'11.
And I'm 5'5.
I'm 5'5. If you ask a doctor, I might be slightly shorter than that.
I was like, I always told people I was like 5'8 and a half, and I'm 5'7 on a good day.
I'm 5'4 and 3/4. You know, when you ask a 7-year-old, they're like, I'm 7 1/2 right now. Like, I need that last quarter inch. But she was half a foot taller than me. So in the weigh-in photo, she looks like, and she's the same weight without cutting almost that I am with cutting like 15 pounds. So I look like I'm in sausage casings next to her.
Yeah.
I'm just like, bulldog. And she's super tall. She's a very good fighter, but.
That's so funny.
Awesome. Megan's trying to. Maybe get into her first fight.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I should probably find a gym first.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. You think you need a gym, you could probably find someone else who doesn't have a gym. There are lots of girls around who just...
Maybe I should do that. Just go.
I see lots of girls. There are lots of guys around who fight without a gym. I mean, they're not...
Really?
They're not That's lots of thing? Girls in the... Yeah. Oh, yeah. Street like people who say they're a street fighter, they'll come in and be like, I'm a scrapper. I don't do none of your in the gym fight. I don't know why I got that weird accent.
Yeah,
in
like,
the gym fight.
Who are you repping right now?
I've met so many of these people backstage at fights where they're talking about how street smart and how street tough they are.
I don't know if I could do that. Not only for the fact that you then don't really have coaches,
it's
but
a
you have
terrible
no
idea.
You have no support, and like I kind of. I assume, so I haven't fought, but my assumption is that a big part of it is the mental thing, and you do need people behind you, because if you don't, like,
if you do get
rocked, you're going to go to your corner, and no one's going to be there to tell you it's going to be okay, you need to get your shit together.
Yeah.
So. I fought a girl with no corner once. She was so sad. It was really sad. I just felt sad for her because she was like all alone at weigh-ins, and someone from my gym cornered her.
Really?
Someone I didn't know, but he cornered her, and then later he was like, hey, sorry about that. I just saw her. She was alone. I was like, it's fine. The fight lasted 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Like, it just wasn't.
I think it's a morale thing.
Yeah.
It is a morale thing.
Plus, I'm just terrible at everything, so I need someone to teach me everything.
No, you want to go to a gym just because people do it. Like the thing about being, you know, I don't care how street smart you are. Some people probably would win in a street fight that would go into an MMA fight. But if you're not getting in street fights for, you know, 10, 15 hours a week, you're not training.
Plus, when you're in the cage, and you can correct me at being the professional MMA fighter that you are and have been. But like, I would imagine that like when you, the fighter, are in the cage, you don't even realize what's happening in the sense of like, your corner can see it like a chess match. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, the other fighter like happens to do this a lot. Emily, adjust, do this, right? So I think that's the other crucial part about having a team and having a corner, which is probably why most people do have gyms, is because they know your style. And then once the cage door closes, they can see what the other person is doing when you're just like, God, destroy, you know?
Just swinging. I'm going to be the Gabby Garcia. Arms flailing. It makes me think of those wacky waving inflatable guys.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we gotta
it's going to be me at my first.
Is that going to be your fight nickname?
Yeah. The inflatable.
Megan. The inflatable hand waving guy.
I'm really selling myself, guys.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's okay. You're underselling it. Your opponent's going to walk in like, I got this. And then that's when you show them
the
hand waving.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's how it feels to fight those. You're in the gym, you're like, I'm so crisp, I'm Muhammad Ali right now. And then you get in the cage and you're like,
what? Seriously.
That's 100%. Yeah. That's how it's going to go. Yeah. Write it down, everyone. Take notes. If I ever do have the opportunity to compete, that's what it's going to be like.
Well, props to both of you because, like, as much as I'm a huge MMA fan, female and otherwise, I like the sport itself for myself from a fitness standpoint, I don't think I have the heart to do it.
Oh, disagree.
disagree. Yeah, I disagree too. I don't think, I mean, I don't.
Is this the start of Lynn, Lynn the lion? Yes. You can, clearly can see I've thought about this a little bit.
I mean, you've already got the name picked out. Lion.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're basically there. No, I don't know. Because I think, I think
you've got a great PR engine. It's going to be fine.
You're all good. You're good. You're ready to go.
No, sponsor myself.
Yeah. You know? No, but I don't know. Because I don't know if I have the heart. I could totally get into the cage and eat it or whatever, whether I do a Muay Thai fight or I just want to compete, right? Because I want to know if I have the heart. And I don't think if you're training in any kind of combat sport, I don't think you know if you have the heart until you do get it out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like, cause you can spar with your buddies and you can train every day, all day. And like, you can think you're awesome, but it's not until you get down to competition. I mean, very, very different, but it's the same thing with rowing. You'd have people who are really good trainers and really, then you'd have people who are really good competitors.
Yeah.
So it's, you don't know which one you are until you take the plunge. So I guess that's why I'm driven to want to try, because I don't know. So
I think that you should try to get to, yeah, like to see that you have it. My personal belief is everyone has it. Like, I think anyone could fight. I don't think everyone should fight. I think some people they that could. Want to fight probably shouldn't fight. I think there are times I should not have fought, but I think that everyone has it in them, and it's part of why I wanted to be a trainer, is just like to let people see that they have that. You know, and it's a little different. It's a little different to be in the cage, but I think many people are shocked to find, even if you just take a boxing class or whatever, that like getting hit in the face actually doesn't end your life. That first time that you don't put your gloves up and you just eat one, you're like, oh, still here.
I've said that to people and you know, they're doing like, oh, cardio class. I'm like, oh, you should come try a class. And they're like, I could never get punched in the face. I'm like, I'm telling you, it's not that bad. I mean, I don't know. I was like, you don't notice it until later.
I'm a bleeder, okay? Like, I'm the kid who on the playground playing wall ball, if someone like accidentally like bopped me in the face, it'd be like gushes of blood everywhere. And I think, you know.
Yeah, but you got enough of it.
No, exactly.
Like 10 like gallons or something in your body.
Exactly. Right? Like, I broke enough vessels like sparring that before you know it, I was like, you know, this is bad. And I think it builds something in your mentality, like a sense of resilience that you don't really get with other things. Mm-hmm. Even now, like, I don't do nearly as much like Krav Maga or even like Muay Thai or other forms of MMA. I'm doing a lot more like strength and conditioning oriented type of workouts, but like I definitely feel like I don't get the same sense of like reward's not the right word, because of course I do get a reward, but you get what I'm saying. It's like that same sense of like, wow.
So you're saying looking beat up makes you feel
it's not even just getting beat up. Like I felt that.
No, I know.
I felt that when I was doing CrossFit, and I don't do CrossFit anymore, but when I was doing it, I definitely had that sense of like, I was proud that I survived the workout. Mm. You know, well, yeah, same thing as if you're like, wow, I got out of there, you know.
And I didn't die.
It's different. You know, my coach used to say that, you know, your body is programmed to always save a little bit in the tank. Mm. Like with this, I'm not really sure how true this is, but with this sort of drawn out explanation about how, you know, if you were being like chased down by a tiger, you need to have a little bit more in case when that tiger leaves, another one shows up or something, right? So you always have a little bit for the next danger that occurs. Where your body is built never to empty the tank, but in training, you need to go to that point where you're like, I can do no more, and then you do more. And which sounds really absurd, but like everyone has had, I think, that experience.
I mean, that's
like
the sport
you walk
of rowing.
On the legs that are wobbly, and you're like, well, I can do it. It wasn't good, but it happened.
It's whenever people are like, how did you row with a broken back for a year and a half? I'm like, well, rowing is literally the ability to just not stop.
Yeah.
when your lungs are dying, your legs are feel like acid, and you can't see. Like you just kind of, your brain shuts off and you just keep going.
She hard sold me on trying the sport of rowing, by the way,
the
when she first told me about
She's really selling it with the like broken ribs on both sides. Sounds like right?
I mean, so like when I got into rowing, my coach said, you have to read this book. It's going to give you, it's called The Red Rose Crew, and it's about the women's first Olympic 8, and it's about the crew. And I remember, like, this is a vivid memory for me. And in one of the first chapters, there's a story about how
This woman, Carrie Graves, when she first got into rowing, her and one of her friends would get on a rowing machine and they would take turns rowing and see who would like pass out first. And that is the sport I signed up for. Wow. So when you say stuff like that, I'm like, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about when you're like trying to see what your limits are. So like every day in training, it was like, okay, if I have 5 20-minute pieces, I need to basically die 5 times like today.
See, business is sport for me, I feel like. Like when I get good news, when I get bad news, especially with the bad news, I'm like, so how do I get up out of this one? I wish I had more in my tank sometimes. I'm like, it's all mental.
But you're still here, so you must be doing it.
It's true.
Well, and it's impressive. I think it's a lot harder to have that like that grit in business or in work or anything outside of the gym. When you're doing something physical, especially if you have a coach, like the coach is everything, is if someone will stand over you and say, do another one.
You can do it. I know you can.
One more shot. Like someone will force you to keep going. Force in the lightest sense. I mean, yeah. But with that, it's like you just pick one foot up and keep going. With work, you have to like make your mind still put out something good, and that's really hard.
So Megan, does that mean that I need to hover over you at your desk and just be like, Megan, one more, come on.
One more social media post.
Yeah. One more sale. One more ad.
No, but that was actually like in my brain during a 7.5-8 minute race, I would have like that in my head, like my coach is here because he knows I can do this. Like it was never my own belief. It was my coach's belief in me that meant more. So go figure. I'm a pleaser though, middle child all the way, all day, every day. If my coach tells me he thinks I can do something, I'm going to do it. But if he tells me he thinks I can't, then I'm probably not. Then I feel devastated. Right. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, that's true. I mean, even with the business, like besides like our early customers, our backers and you, Emily, as our brand ambassador, there's other countless business advisors, investors who like, do say keep going. So to a degree, I like have a corner for the business too, but it's such a different type of endurance race because it's true. It's all your mind. You have to wake up in the morning being like, hell yeah, I can fucking do this.
But well, the reality is most of the time the fight is all in your mind too. It's like I think a lot of fights, a good fight is close enough that the person who believes it more gets it, which sounds pithy and stupid, but it's like, unless you are vastly outmatched, which shouldn't be happening, you know?
Yeah.
Knowing it's possible is making it possible.
So how's the new year kicked off for you? Because I went to 24-hour fitness last night and I wanted to bash my head into the wall because...
Was it packed?
I couldn't... Like, leaving the parking lot, you thought it was like Black Friday. That's basically what it feels like every day at 24-hour during the month of January. It feels like Black Friday every day.
Oh, I kind of want to go look.
Oh my God, it's terrible. People are fighting over medicine balls and...
You want to do good people watching, we for sure.
From there.
Yeah, seriously, you should.
Like, you have a great left hook. You know what you should do.
Yeah, seriously. Well, no, but yeah, how's business been for you with the New Year's resolution season?
It is good. It is. Yeah. This is my first year. I mean, this is not my first year as a trainer during New Year's resolution, but it's my first year like owning the business while that was happening. And it is so, even just like second or third week of December, the uptick is so noticeable as I'm getting emails every day. And it's like, I'm a small new business. I started 4 months ago, really.
Yeah.
And to be getting daily emails from more and more people is shocking. Like,
that's awesome. Your gym's location is also amazing.
It is amazing. Yeah. Tell everyone.
Like, I mean, the space is awesome. It's super accessible. That's like
it's like off Hawthorne and 6th.
Yeah, 6th and Madison. Madison. It's right as you're going over the Hawthorne Bridge. So we have like 4,000 bicyclists a day in the summer.
Yeah. And that's awesome. When Dion and I stopped by last week and did a workout, Dion was like, where is it? I was like, I'm telling you, you literally go by it like every single day.
It's very close to here. Yeah.
And it's very close to Pacific Pie. So
which is key. Yeah.
some vertical integration. We need to go give them some gifts.
Get those gains.
Yeah.
Get those gains.
Yeah, that's right.
Do some squats. Have a meat pie. Right. Sounds like a great Wednesday night. So
if it fits your macros, kind of thing.
Yeah.
How's the diversity?
Make it fit your macros.
Yeah. How's the diversity of your program?
What do you mean?
Like, just your clientele makeup. Like, how have you seen your clientele ebb and flow between diversity or, like, people who come from different backgrounds? Like, just curious to see.
I think we have a lot of different backgrounds. The gym definitely skews towards mostly women. My program is dramatically more women than men. And then my partner, who runs an even bigger program in the same space, he owns
Hi, Josh.
Josh's group has more men, but I think personal training anywhere is always more women. And then the biggest thing that we see diversity in is really people's ages, is we have a lot of different, I have clients as young as 12 and as old awesome. As I think 64, 62 that's maybe awesome. At the top. So it's a very wide range of people. We try.
Yeah. No, and tell me again the name of Josh's side of the business, because Bold and Badass is yours.
Yes, Bold and Badass is mine, and then Form and Function is Josh's.
Form and Function, that's right. And what's the Training for Warriors program? I know you're
I see you looking at my logo.
I've been awkwardly staring at her chest for this entire podcast.
Nothing unusual.
Yeah.
I was just staring at your shoulders.
Yeah. Everything about Emily is
so
inviting.
My shoulders are up here, man.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. No.
Right under the pigtails. Yeah, Training for Warriors is my certification. It's also the affiliation of our gym. Technically, it is like on paper, this is Josh's affiliation, but we both use the Training for Warriors system. And what it is, it's a program run by Martin Rooney. Mm-hmm. And he trained some of the earliest MMA fighters. He trained with Gracie. He trained Hoist Gracie and you know, various other MMA and jiu-jitsu giants like 20 years ago. And his program now is an accessible to everyone program that is based on the kinds of things he did to train pro fighters.
Mm-hmm. Most, on the strength and conditioning
side. On the strength and conditioning side. Most, and really, it's like, it's not a lot of sport-specific stuff. Mm-hmm. I think they kind of encourage away from that sport-specific training in the strength and conditioning world, but what's cool about its program is the vast majority of Training for Warriors gyms or affiliates don't have any fighters in them at all. They're not doing MMA, so it actually was a really great affiliation for me. I was really excited to get his certification to have that, like,
backup.
Yeah, to have that kind of lineage in my program.
Yeah.
He's a really cool guy, and he focuses a lot on, like, storytelling and motivation, and has a lot of amazing stories about the early ages of MMA. So
I'm sure. That's really cool. Yeah, because I'd seen you wear that shirt before, but I wasn't familiar exactly with the program, and I couldn't remember if that was Josh's specific class or program or not. So
yeah.
Really cool. Yeah. I was going to say something. I was going to tell you. We haven't told you yet.
Tell
We're
me.
We're going to Invicta
next
weekend. We're so excited.
Dude, nice. The fight's on the 16th, right?
On the 16th, yeah. Cyborg card. I think it's their 15th fight card, so we're super excited about that.
Awesome.
What should we know? What do you think we should do to prepare for this?
I don't know. I've never been to an Invicta.
Oh, you actually haven't gone to spectate either.
No. Well, they're far away, and
yeah.
At the time before I was signed with them, I was very low-level fighter, basically barely working and just training all the time. So that was not in my
budget.
In my budget, yeah. I was living like a fighter, like you've heard to live like a Spartan. That's basically what it's like.
Yeah.
The saying, whatever it takes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Sleep on someone's couch if it means that you can put your rent money into yep, I know that
game. I know fighters that did that, like literally sleeping on the floor. It's like, you know.
Or sleep at the gym.
We call that living the dream. Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you haven't done basically everything you could do in life, you've slept on the mats, you've bled on the mats, you've, you know, passed out. Like, it's...
I know that game.
Whole life.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm really excited. I can't wait.
That's incredible.
Yeah. It's in Orange County this year, or for this first fight is in Orange County, so we're super excited.
Practically in a neighborhood.
Yeah, practically. That's true. Although they did have that fight in Vegas, so I'm hoping they're going to bring more to the West Coast.
That'd be really cool.
Because, yeah, Kansas.
Well, they have six, they amount six or seven fights this year?
Yes. Actually, Shannon told us that they have six fights. Six fight cards this year. So, we're really excited to see where the rest of them are because, yeah, Kansas City is way too far.
It's way far away.
But
I've never been
to Kansas City to Orange County.
Oh yeah, that's right. We stopped in there. I forgot. We stopped there on the way driving here. Thanks, Dion. To be fair, that was our longest day of driving, and when we got to the hotel that night, we were like, ugh.
This is about Megan's move from Pittsburgh
that's
to
right.
Portland.
We did have a really good meal though at the hotel
in Kansas
restaurant.
City?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a good meal, but we were both so tired that we were like staring at our meat. staring.
Getting lost in the abyss of meat. You know? We're really excited. I'm mostly excited because I've always wanted to go to the Invicta card, but for the same reason, it was like either too far or like out of reach financially, and now we'll get to go. And so I'm really excited about that. But when you originally signed, what was the time period for, like, which fight card would you have ended up being on?
I was supposed to be on there was a card in the end of February, and I'm trying to remember what number it was. I think it was 11 or 10.
Oh, maybe. Okay.
It was one of those things where it's like the day. So, I mean, really, Invicta contacted me before I was actually announcing signing with Invicta. Mm-hmm. But the day that we announced it was the day that my toe went crazy.
Oh, no.
It was like we announced it. It was about 4 or 5 weeks out. The toe thing, you know, happened. I was in the car. My coach drove me to the hospital, right? So we were like going to call an ambulance. He was like, no, I'll just drive you. So he drives me to the hospital, and I'm on the phone with my manager in the car, like, hey, you're going to have to call Invicta, tell them I'm pulling out. And he's like, well, let's just see what happens when you get to the hospital. I'm like, no. We texted him a picture, like, you need to understand. There's no,
yeah.
It's not going to solve itself right away.
Yeah.
This isn't like a little baby dislocation.
No, like my bone is protruding out of my foot.
Yeah. So basically, I had a very whirlwind affair with Invicta. I was like, oh boy, Invicta. Oh no, toe. Yeah. And all within the span of more or less a few days or weeks.
So what was that like for you? Because like, were you just crushed and did it take, or were you kind of one of those people that just bounced back and you're like, okay, like, all right, we're going to get through this.
Yeah. Sir. I feel like some people take these kinds of challenges. Like, yes, it like sucks. It hurts. You might cry, whatever. But like some people take this in stride as like, you know what? Like, there's a reason for this, and like people think it's right. And then there's people who like fall in the depths of despair.
That was me. Yeah, I was a despair. When I found out my back was broken, that I basically had to walk away from rowing, I was pretty much
spent. This is like, after what, 15?
10 years.
10 years.
10 years of like dedicating my life to it. So I pretty much spent a solid like 3 to 6 months in a, probably in a bar. No.
Legally.
Yeah, legally. Well, yeah. Yeah, but.
I mean, losing the Invicta fight itself, I think it was something where, like, as soon as we realized what had happened, like, there was a moment of, hey, why'd you fall down? And then we just look at my toe, and I'm like, oh, that's it. Like, yeah. That is it.
That'll,
you know,
do it.
And I don't know that I don't know if I'm a person who doesn't wallow in the depths of despair. Certainly things have hit me before, but this time I think I looked at it and immediately just kind of saw what was happening.
Yeah.
It wasn't really until a few months later, like I still thought I was going to go right back into competing as soon as I healed it. And I kind of saw, you know, my priorities realign in the months after that.
Yeah.
And that was a little harder, is there was months and months of like, oh my God, how could I leave fighting? What am I doing? This is my purpose in life. I'm like, this is my purpose in life. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
how many fights had you had on your belt at that point?
I had 4 pro fights and I had 14 total fights. 13-1 is my combined record.
Okay. So. Oh, so you had quite a bit of an AMI record too.
Yeah, I had about something like that of competing. So I've been competing since 2010. I mean, it was like, it's something where even if you were not fighting all the time, there were some fights where I only had some years where I only had 2 fights and some years where I had like 5 fights. And it's
That's
like,
crazy.
Even when I wasn't competing for like 9 months at a time, I was still training like I was in fight camp all year round. We were trying to be ready in case that fight came. Because if you haven't had a fight in 8 months, you're like, if someone offers me a fight next weekend, I want to take it.
Right.
So after being in like the all or nothing lifestyle, it was very hard to get used to being a normal person, like not counting my calories or you know, doing like, yeah, like doubles and triple days of training. So
I think that's what, like, I, for the women who are like in the UFC right now, or I mean women in the sport in general, but especially even like the UFC, it's like I feel like there's a very low number of women's fights, even on like prelim cards early. There's prelim and then there's early prelim. Like, you don't even see any on the early prelim sometimes. And it's just, I can only imagine that position, that little position when you are actually a professional fighter and you're waiting for that day.
Yep.
For that phone call.
It'll keep building though. I have faith.
Well, and
I
it's
have
like,
faith.
Even if there's not a lot, it wasn't when I started fighting there. I mean, really, Gina Carano and Chris Cyborg were like the only fighters that existed.
Yeah.
Like
the
only female fighters that existed. Yeah. It was like, you didn't see one fight per card. You saw like one fight per year. I mean, maybe that's a bit of an exaggeration, but it was really, really rare.
Well, and I mean, I think Lynn and I have talked about it before. It's been very interesting just over the past few years how women's fighting has gone from kind of like the sideshow attraction to, people are starting to recognize there's a less skill and there's a lot of things to watch. And
oh yeah,
just as it might be quote unquote different than the men, but it's still, it's worth it. And it's kind of, it's very interesting. That's one of the reasons I like going to bars to watch the fight. Cause I love to hear the mixture of people. Oh. Like, you know, you get the guys like the bros that were sitting behind us for the Rousey fight who were like, oh, this is boring. Why are these, what are these girls doing? Cause they were doing stand up and they got bored by that. Well, don't watch a fight if you don't like to watch fighting, which is interesting too, because usually it's when they go to ground that people say it's boring. Right. You know, but then you get the people, like, I've overheard things like, whoa, like, this is really cool. And this sounds, this is
especially when it comes from women.
I love when it comes from women. I really love when it comes from guys that on the surface, I mean, they might not be, but they kind of look like meatheads. Mm-hmm. Like, I love when I see those guys like really get into the women's fights, because.
And not in like a yay mud wrestling. Let's see. A right.
No cat fight. Yeah.
Right. So, and I definitely think that that has started to change, you know, even the guys who are rocking, I don't know, like. Ed Hardy are starting to say like, yeah, I'm really looking forward for the Joanna fight or ABCD. Like, it's pretty cool to see that change.
That is awesome. You're so much more tolerant than I am.
I think it's amusing.
Let me preface this by saying, I tell people all the time, like, I don't hit people. I'm like, well, I hit people, but only in the gym. I do not use violence to solve problems. I'm obviously, yeah, exactly. Look at me, I'm not a violent person. But like, when I hear someone say like, oh, you know, girl's boring, blah, I see red. It is so physically painful for me, especially at a live fight, to be in an audience and hear someone say like cat fight. I lose my mind with anger. It's not zen.
It's
cool,
so funny, because like, Emily, like, to me, like, you're such an interesting individual, because it's like you have this very like intellectual academic side of you that I think of when I think Emily Corso. Then there's like badass instructor, professional MMA fighter, and like then there's this side that you're describing, like the seeing red. But you're so sweet. I'm just like, maybe I should make a really chauvinistic comment.
So we're all gonna go to Buffalo Wild Wings. Yeah.
In my defense, I've never been in a fight in public. I never once had a street fight.
I just want to see her face, like when that moment when she hits red. I feel like it'd be really entertaining.
I will say,
the last thing they see is angry Shirley Temple coming at them.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess like when I hear guys say stuff like that, it's like those guys at the bar that were sitting behind us. Like, I turn around and they're like, me, like little wimps, and they're like drunk off.
They're always someone I could beat up.
Yeah.
I think that about everyone I see, but
they're typically drunk. Like, you know, like the group of guys behind us, it was hilarious because after they were talking about how boring the girls' fights were, I overheard them like trying to talk each other into going and talking to girls. And I was like, oh my gosh, you are boys. Like, you're little babies. You kind of need like cuddled or something. So see, I see red at first. I'm like, oh, how dare you? But then I look at these people and I'm like, oh, I kind of feel bad for them. I'm like, you have a very small understanding of what humanity is capable of.
It's true. I mean, and to be fair, like, you sit at a fight and you always hear guys like, I just get upset sometimes about fight fans not giving fighters cards. Like, oh, they're tired. I'm like, dude, it's the fifth round. Everybody's tired.
Oh,
yeah. You know, and it's always someone who doesn't do it, who's like got a lot to say, and you just kind of got to let it go. But yeah, it's always some guy who just couldn't have taken the fight anyway. Yeah. So
Deanna and I one time went to a friend's fight, and it was like right after we moved to Pittsburgh, and I'll never forget, we're sitting in the stands, and all we hear from this guy behind us literally just keeps yelling, spinning back fist.
Yes.
Oh man. Yes. Spinning. You should have thrown a spinning back fist. So like every time I see our friend Zach, I just in my head, I think, spinning back fist. Why didn't you throw the spinning back? I mean, this guy for, I mean, it was.
Have you ever thrown a spinning back fist?
I have not.
Oh, okay.
The girl that I was supposed to fight on the Invicta card last year, if they found an opponent, she's on the card.
Who was it?
Chris Stanley.
Oh, she is fighting.
So her move, at least a year ago, that she was really known for, she won a fight with a spinning back kick, I think.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Knockout. And it was like, it was a very brutal knockout, but it's like, people are like, oh, you got to watch out for that. I'm like, I'm not going to watch out for a spinning back kick. Like, you're going to land one of those like once a career.
Yeah.
You know, that is a really, that's a really far-fetched like finisher. You know, maybe if we're playing Mortal Kombat or something, but like
pressing all the buttons.
Right. Or like, yeah, get it. Like, that's not anybody's finishing move.
Now that I heard this story, every time I walk by Form and Function, I'm going to open that door and go spinning back fist.
So now whenever I, like, those are probably like my two favorite stories about like
fight fans. Spinning back fist. And then, oh man, this is so boring.
We should write down a couple of sayings before the Invicta fights.
You gotta have them locked and loaded.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, find someone we'll cool to sit behind so you can whisper it in their ear.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I think that wraps up today's episode. Spinning back fist. Emily's got a giant roster of clients that she needs to tend to this evening, but we are so happy to have her be one of our first brand ambassadors.
Yay.
And to have her be involved with us ongoing. So thanks for coming in and kicking it. And we'll catch you guys next time.
Have a good day. Boop.